Investor Relations here at Tesla, and I'm joined today by Elon Musk and Vaibhav Taneja and a number of other executives. Our Q4 results were announced at about 3:00 P.M. Central Time in the update deck we published at the same link as this webcast. During this call, we will discuss our business outlook and make forward-looking statements. These comments are based on our predictions and expectations as of today. Actual events or results could differ materially due to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those mentioned in our most recent filings with the SEC. During the question and answer portion of today's call, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. Please use the raise hand button to join the question queue. Before we jump into Q&A, Elon has some opening remarks. Elon?
Thank you. So in summary, in Q4, we set a record and delivered vehicles at an annualized rate of nearly 2 million a year. So congratulations to the Tesla team on excellent work achieving record production and deliveries. Model Y was the best-selling vehicle of any kind for 2024. That's worth noting. Not just the best electric vehicle, the best vehicle of any kind on Earth, number one, was Model Y. We are staying focused on maximizing volumes and obviously doubling down for, I don't know what, really, I was gonna say doubling down on autonomy, but really it's like autonomy is like 10x-ing things, frankly. Doubling is not even enough. We made many critical investments in 2024 in manufacturing, AI, and robotics that will bear immense fruit in the future. Immense. Like, it's in fact to such a scale that it is difficult to comprehend. And I've said this before, and I'll stand by it. I see a path. I'm not saying it's an easy path, but I see a path to Tesla being the most valuable company in the world by far. Not even close. Like, maybe several times more than. I mean, there is a path where Tesla is worth more than the next top five companies combined. There's a path to that. I mean, I think it's like an incredibly, it's like a difficult path, but it is an achievable path. So, and that is overwhelmingly due to autonomous vehicles and autonomous humanoid robots. So our focus is actually building towards that. And then that's what we're laying the ground. We laid the groundwork for that in 2024. We'll continue to lay the groundwork for that in 2025. In fact, more than lay the groundwork, actually, so we'd be building the structure, we're building the manufacturing lines, and like, you know, I'd like setting up for what I think will be an epic 2026 and a ridiculous 2027 and 2028. Ridiculously good. That is my prediction. And you know, as yet, very few people understand the value of Full Self-Driving and our ability to monetize the fleet. You know, I've some of these things I've said for quite a long time, and I know people have said, "Well, you know, Elon's the boy who cried wolf," like, several times. But I'm telling you, there's a damn wolf this time. And you can drive it. In fact, it can drive you. It's a self-driving wolf. You know, for a lot of people, they're like, their experience of Tesla autonomy is like, if it's even a year old, if it's even 2 years old, it's like meeting someone when they're like a toddler and thinking that they're gonna be a toddler forever. But obviously, they're not gonna be a toddler forever. They grow up. But if their last experience was like, "Oh, FSD was a toddler," it's like, well, it's grown up now. Have you seen it? It's like walks and talks. And that's really what we've got. And it's difficult for people to understand this because human intuition is linear, as opposed to what we're seeing is exponential progress. So that's why my number one recommendation for anyone who doubts is simply try it. Have you tried it? When's the last time you tried it? And the only people who are skeptical, the only people who are skeptical are those who have not tried it. So, you know, a passenger car typically has only about 10 hours of utility per week out of 168. A very small percentage. Once that car is autonomous, My rough estimate is that it is in use for at least a third of the hours of the week. So call it 50, maybe 55 hours of the week. And it can be used for both cargo delivery and people delivery. So even, let's say, people are asleep, but you can deliver packages in the middle of the night or resupply restaurants or whatever the case may be, whatever people need at all hours of the day or night. That same asset, the thing that is, these things that already exist with no incremental cost change, just a software update, now have five times or more the utility than they currently have. I think this will be the largest asset value increase in human history. Maybe there's something bigger, but I just don't know what it is. And so people who look in the rearview mirror are looking for past precedent, except I don't think there is one. So, but you know, the reality of autonomy is upon us. And I repeat my advice: try driving the car, or let it drive you. So now it works very well in the U.S., but of course it will over time work just as well everywhere else. So we're working hard to grow our annual volumes. Our current constraint is battery packs this year, but we're working on addressing that constraint. And I think we will make progress on addressing that constraint. And then things are really going to go ballistic next year, and really ballistic in 27 and 28. So, a bit more on full self-driving. Our Q4 vehicle safety report shows continued year-over-year improvement in safety for vehicles. So the safety numbers, if somebody has supervised full self-driving turned on or not, the safety differences are gigantic. And people have seen the immense improvement with version 13 and with incremental versions in version 13. And then version 14 is going to be yet another step beyond that is very significant. We launched the Cortex training cluster at Gigafactory Austin, which was a significant contributor to FSD advancement. And we continue to invest in training infrastructure at our Texas headquarters. So the training needs for Optimus humanoid robot are probably at least ultimately 10x what's needed for the car. At least to get to the full range of useful roles. You can say, like, how many different roles are there for a humanoid robot versus a car? A humanoid robot has probably, 1,000 times more uses and more complex things than in a car. That doesn't mean the training scales by 1,000, but it's probably 10x. Now you can do this progressively, so it doesn't mean like, oh, Tesla's going to spend like $500 billion in training compute, because we will obviously train Optimus to do enough tasks to match the output of Optimus robots. But obviously the cost of training is dropping dramatically with time. Like, it's one of those things where I think long-term Optimus will be... Optimus has the potential to be north of $10 trillion in revenue. Like, it's really bananas. So then you can obviously afford a lot of training compute in that situation. In fact, even $500 billion of training compute in that situation would be quite a good deal. The future is going to be incredibly different from the past, that's for sure. We live at this unbelievable inflection point in human history. So you know, the proof is in the pudding. So we're going to be launching unsupervised full self-driving as a paid service in Austin in June. So, I've talked with the team. We feel confident in being able to do an initial launch of unsupervised, no one in the car, full self-driving in Austin in June. We already have Teslas operating autonomously, unsupervised full self-driving at our factory in Fremont, and we'll soon be doing that at our factory in Texas. So thousands of cars every day are driving with no one in them at our Fremont factory in California. They will soon be doing that in Austin and then elsewhere in the world at the rest of our factories, which is pretty cool. And the cars aren't just driving to exactly the same spot, because obviously it all wouldn't collide at the same spot. The cars are actually programmed with what lane they need to park into to be picked up for delivery. So they drive from the factory end of line to their destination parking spot to be picked up for delivery to customers. And they're doing this reliably every day, thousands of times a day. It's pretty cool. Like I said, the Teslas will be in the wild with no one in them in June in Austin. So what I'm saying is, this is not some far off mythical situation. It's literally, 5-6 months away, 5 months away, type of thing. And while we're stepping it, putting our toe in the water gently at first, just to make sure everything's cool, our solution is a generalized AI solution. It is not does not require high precision maps of a locality. So we just want to be cautious. It's not that it doesn't work beyond Austin. In fact, it does. We just want to put a toe in the water, make sure everything is okay, then put a few more toes in the water, then put a foot in the water, with safety of the general public and those in the car as our top priority. With regard to Optimus, obviously I'm making these revenue predictions that sound absolutely insane. I realize that, but they are, I think they will prove to be accurate. Now with Optimus, there's a lot of uncertainty on the exact timing, because it's not like a train arriving at the station for Optimus. We are designing the train and the station and in real time while also building the tracks. And so they're like, why didn't the train arrive exactly at 12:05? I'm like, we're literally designing the train and the tracks in the station in real time. How can we predict this thing with absolute precision? It's impossible. The normal internal plan calls for roughly 10,000 Optimus robots to be built this year. Will we succeed in building 10,000 exactly by the end of December this year? Probably not. But will we succeed in making several thousand? Yes, I think we will. Will those several thousand Optimus robots be doing useful things by the end of the year? Yes, I'm confident they will. They will do useful things. Optimus in use at the Tesla factories, production design one, will inform what we change for production design two, which we expect to launch next year. And our goal is to ramp propped Optimus production faster than maybe anything's ever been ramped. Meaning like aspirationally an order of magnitude ramp per year. Now, if we aspire to an order of magnitude ramp per year, perhaps we only end up with a half order of magnitude per year. But that's the kind of growth that we're talking about. It doesn't take very many years before we're making 100 million of these things a year. If you go up by, let's say, a factor, by 5x per year.
It's insane.
Insane. Not 50%, 500%. So, These are big growth numbers. But we do need to, this is an entirely new supply chain. It is entirely new technology. There's nothing off the shelf to use. We try desperately with Optimus to use any existing motors, any actuators, sensors. Nothing worked for a humanoid robot at any price. We had to design everything from physics first principles to work for a humanoid robot. And with the most sophisticated hand that has ever been made before, by far. And Optimus will be able to like play the piano and be able to thread a needle. I mean, this is the level of precision no one has been able to achieve. And so it's really something special. So my prediction long term is that Optimus will be overwhelmingly the value of the company. Regarding energy, back to Earth. It was Elon. can you come back here for a minute? Okay, back to Earth. Energy storage is a big deal, and will become. It's already super important. Will become incredibly important in the future, and it is something that enables far greater energy output to the grid than is currently possible, because the vast majority of the grid has no energy storage capability, so they have to design the power plants for very high peaks, and assuming that there's no energy storage. Once you have grid energy storage and home-based energy storage, the actual total energy output per year of the grid is dramatically greater than people think. Maybe it's at least double. This will drive the demand of stationary battery packs, and especially the grid scale ones, to insane, basically as much demand as we could possibly make. We have our second factory, which is in Shanghai, that's starting operation, and we're building a third factory. So we're trying to ramp output of the stationary battery storage as quickly as possible. Now, there is a challenge here where we have to be careful too, that we're not robbing from one pocket to take to another pocket, because for a given gigawatt hours per year of cell output, we have to say, well, does it go into stationary applications or mobile applications? It can't go both into both. So we have to make that trade-off. But overall, the demand for total gigawatt hours of batteries, whether mobile or stationary, that will grow in a very, very big way over time. In conclusion, 2025 really is a pivotal year for Tesla. And when people look back on 2025 and the launch of unsupervised full self-driving, true real-world AI that actually works, I think they may regard it as the biggest year in Tesla history, maybe even bigger than our first car, the Roadster, or the Model S, or the Model 3, or Model Y. I think it probably will be viewed 25 as maybe the most important year in Tesla's history. There is no company in the world that is as good at real-world AI as Tesla. I don't even know if he's in second place. Like, you say, like, who's in second place for real-world AI? I would need a very big telescope to see them. That's how far behind they are. All right.
Great. Thank you very much, Elon. And Vaibhav has some opening remarks as well.
Yeah, I'll talk about things on Earth. As Elon mentioned, in Q4, we set records in vehicle deliveries and energy storage deployments in an uncertain macro environment. We were able to grow auto and energy storage volumes, both sequentially and on a year-on-year basis. For this, I would like to thank the efforts of everyone at Tesla to make this a reality, and our customers who helped us achieve this feat. Coming into the fourth quarter, our focus was to reduce inventory levels in the automotive business, and we accomplished that by ending the quarter with the lowest finished good inventory in the last 2 years. This was a result of offering not only attractive financing options, but also other discounts and programs, which impacted ASPs. While we saw volume growth in almost all regions that we operate in, we hit a new record for deliveries in the Greater China market. This is an encouraging trend since we grew volume in a highly competitive BEV market. On the automotive margin front, we saw a quarter-over-quarter decline, primarily due to lower ASPs and due to the recognition of FSD-related revenue in Q3 from feature releases. Our journey on cost reduction continues, and we were able to get our overall cost per car down below $35,000, driven primarily by material costs. This was despite increased depreciation and other costs as we prepare for the transition to the new Model Y, for which we recently started taking orders in all markets. All our factories will start producing the new Model Y next month. While we feel confident in our team's abilities to ramp production quickly, know that it is an unprecedented change, and we are not aware of anybody else taking the best-selling car on the planet and updating all factories at the same time. This changeover will result in several weeks of lost production in the quarter. As a result, margins will be impacted due to idle capacity and other ramp-related costs, as is common in any launch, but will be overcome as production is ramped. We will be introducing several new products throughout 2025. We are still on track to launch a more affordable model in the first half of 2025, and we'll continue to expand our lineup from there. On a dollar-for-dollar basis, we believe we have the most compelling lineup today compared to the industry, and it will continue to get better from here. As always, all our products come with the best software in the industry, autonomy features, and capable of full autonomy in the future. And despite the premium experience, the total cost of ownership is close to mass market, less premium competitors. Energy storage deployments reached an all-time high in Q4, but declined sequentially. This was a result of growth came from Megapack and Powerwall. Both businesses continue to be supply constrained, and like Elon mentioned, we're trying to ramp up production with Megafactory Shanghai coming online this quarter onwards. While quarterly deployments will likely continue to fluctuate sequentially, we expect at least 50% growth in deployments year over year in 2025. Gross profit and margins in the service and other business was up year over year, but declined sequentially. This was the result of higher service center costs and lower profit from used car business. The businesses within service and other primarily support our new car business, especially through their impact on total cost of ownership. Therefore, while we manage them to be positive on a GAAP basis, we do not expect similar margins as the rest of the business. There's a lot of uncertainty around tariffs. Over the years, we've tried to localize our supply chain in every market, but we are still very reliant on parts from across the world for all our businesses. Therefore, the imposition of tariffs, which is very likely, and any reciprocity will have an impact on our business and profitability. Our operating expenses grew both year over year and sequentially. The biggest driver of the increase was R&D as we continue to invest in AI-related initiatives. The remaining increase came from growth in our sales capabilities and marketing efforts from referral program. For 2025, we expect operating expenses to increase to support our growth initiatives. It is important to point out that the net income in Q4 was impacted by a $600 million mark-to-market benefit from Bitcoin due to the adoption of a new accounting standard for digital assets, whereby we'll take mark-to-market adjustments through other income every reporting period going forward. Our free cash flow for the quarter was $2 billion, and despite CapEx increase of over $2.4 billion in 2024, we were able to generate free cash flow of $3.6 billion for the year. CapEx efficiency is something we are extremely focused on. While we have invested in AI-related initiatives, we have done so in a very targeted manner to utilize this spend to get immediate benefits. the build out of Cortex was accelerated because of the role, actually helped accelerate the rollout of FSD version 13. Accumulative AI-related CapEx, including infrastructure, so far has been approximately $5 billion. And for 2025, we expect our CapEx to be flat on a year-over-year basis. In conclusion, you know, like Elon said, 2025 is going to be a pivotal year for Tesla. There are a lot of investments which we have made and will continue to make in this coming year, which will set the pace for the next phase of growth. And, you know, it is something which now I'm getting out of Earth. It is going to be out of this world. And we just are putting the right foundation. And that's all I have.
Great. Thank you very much, Vaibhav. Now we will move over to investor questions, and we'll start with say.com. The first question is unsupervised FSD still planned to be released in Texas and California this year? What hurdles still exist to make that happen? You addressed the Texas piece, I think, already. So,
yeah, I'm confident that we will release unsupervised FSD in California this year as well. In fact, I think we will most likely release unsupervised FSD in many regions of the country, of the U.S., by the end of this year. Like I said, we're just putting a toe in the water, then a few toes, then a foot, then leg, then, you know, make sure everything's cool. We're looking for a safety level that is significantly above the average human driver. So it's not anywhere, like, much safer, not like a little bit safer than human, way safer than human. So the standard has to be very high, because the moment there's any kind of, you know, accident with an autonomous car, this immediately gets worldwide headlines, even though about 40,000 people die every year in car accidents in the U.S., and most of them don't even get a mention anywhere. But if somebody scrapes a shin with an autonomous car, it's headline news.
We want to avoid that.
Yeah. So it's really from an the only thing holding us back is an excess of caution. But people can certainly get a feel for how well the car would perform as unsupervised FSD by simply having allowing the car to drive you around your city and see how many times did you have to intervene, not where you wanted to intervene or were a little concerned, but how many times did you have to intervene for definite safety reasons. And you will find that that is currently very rare. And over time, almost never.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question is, are there any discussions with other auto companies about licensing FSD?
Yes. What we're seeing is, at this point, significant interest from a number of major car companies about licensing Tesla full self-driving technology. What we've generally said is the best way to know what to do is take one of our cars apart, and then you can see where the placement of the cameras are, what the thermal needs are of the Tesla AI inference computer. That's better than us, you know, sending some CAD drawings. And then we're only going to entertain situations where the volume would be very high. Otherwise, it's just not worth the complexity. And we will not burden our engineering team with laborious discussions with other engineering teams until we obviously have unsupervised full self-driving working throughout the United States. I think the interest level from other manufacturers to license FSD will be extremely high once it is obvious that unless you have FSD, you're dead.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question is Optimus now mostly design locked for 2025 production?
Optimus is not design locked. So when I say, like, we're designing the train as it's going to, we're redesigning the train as it's going down the tracks while redesigning the tracks and the train stations.
Yeah, we've all of the answers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's rapidly evolving. It's rapidly evolving in a good direction. You know, it's pretty pretty damn amazing, actually. The team's doing a fantastic job. We really have, by far, I think, by far the best team of humanoid robotics engineers in the world. And we also have all the other ingredients necessary, because you need a great battery pack, you need great power electronics, you need great charging capability, you need great communications, good Wi-Fi and cellular connectivity. And of course, you need real world AI. And then the ability to scale that production to huge levels. So you have to design for manufacturing. The things that, what other companies are missing is they're missing the real world AI, and they're missing the ability to scale manufacturing to millions of units a year.
I think that is an underappreciated thing, that industrialization of design is a whole different thing than making a design.
Yeah, prototypes are trivial, basically. Prototypes are easy, production is hard. I've said that for many years. The problem is that there's like those who have never been involved in production or manufacturing somehow think that once you come up with some eureka design that you magically can make a million units a year. And this is totally false. There needs to be some Hollywood story or where they show actually the problem is manufacturing. I've never even heard of one. It just doesn't fit the narrative. The Hollywood thing is like, it's like some lone inventor in a garage goes eureka and suddenly it files a patent and suddenly there's millions of units. But like, guys, we're missing really 99% of the story. 1% is, that old saying, 1%, like a product is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. The Hollywood shows you the 1% inspiration and but forgets about the 99% perspiration of actually figuring out how to make that initial prototype manufacturable and then manufactured at high volume such that the product is reliable, low cost, consistent, doesn't break down all the time. And that is 100 times harder, at least, than the prototype.
And then you have to get it there, deliver it back.
Yeah, you're going to meet all these regulations and there's a zillion regulators around the world. It's very difficult.
Great. Thank you. The next question is also Optimus related. When will Tesla start selling Optimus and what will the price be?
Well, for this year, we expect to just close the loop with Optimus being used internally at Tesla, because we obviously can easily use several thousand humanoid robots at Tesla for, like the most boring, annoying tasks in the factory, like the tasks nobody wants to do, where we have to like beg people to do this task. and then the robot's totally happy to do the boring, dangerous, repetitive task that no humans want to do. And that's also actually some of the easiest use cases for us to, have Optimus do things load the hopper like in body line, if you're like transporting, pieces of sheet metal to the robot, which is already a robot, the robot welding line for the body, and you just have to nonstop take things from one fixture to another fixture. And it's a very boring job. That's the kind of thing what Optimus could do.
The guy who runs around and dumps all the weld studs in the bins.
Yeah, there's a ton of boring jobs, tedious jobs, dangerous, slightly dangerous jobs that's perfect for Optimus. So we expect to use Optimus for those tasks at our factories, and that'll help us close the loop for improvement this year. It's really with production version 2, which I think launches sometime next year. I'd like it to be the beginning of next year, but maybe it's more like the middle of next year. And then we have to with a production line that is designed for, on the order of 10,000 units a month versus 1,000 units a month. So, like when you design a unit when you design a production line for 1,000 units a month, it takes you a while to actually reach anywhere close to 1,000 units a month. When you design and for any given production output, it takes you a while to actually reach its potential. But the current line that we're designing is for roughly 1,000 units a month of Optimus robots. The next line would be for 10,000 units a month. The line after that would be for 100,000 units a month. And I think probably with version 2, that is a very rough guess, because there's so much uncertainty here, very rough guess that we start delivering Optimus robots to companies that are outside of Tesla in maybe the second half of next year, something like that. But like, so this is such an exponential ramp that it'll go from no one's receiving humanoid robots to these things like coming out like crazy.
So we can't build enough.
Well, we're always going to be in the we can't build enough situation. Demand will not be a problem, even at a high price. And then, as I said, like once we're at a steady state of above a million units a year, I think the production, you know, I'm confident at a million units a year that the production cost of Optimus will be less than $20,000. If you compare the complexity of Optimus to the complexity of a car, so just the total mass and complexity of Optimus is much less than a car. So I would expect that at similar volumes to, say, the Model Y, which is over a million units a year, that you'd see Optimus be, I don't know, half the cost, or something like that. What the price of Optimus is a different matter. The price of Optimus will be set by the market demand.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question is, what is the status on mass production of the Tesla Semi, and how will it impact revenue at scale?
I can take that one. So we just closed up the Semi factory roof and walls last week in Reno. It's ahead of schedule, which is great with the weather. In Reno, you never know what's going to happen. But we're prepping for mechanical installation of all the equipment in the coming months. The first builds of the high-volume semi-design will come late this year in 2025 and begin ramping early in 2026. But as we've said before, you know, the Semi is a TCO no-brainer. Like, it's really similar to the Optimus. It's going to be, you know, set by how much people pay. And then, you know, it as a total cost of ownership, it's much, much cheaper than any other transportation you can have. So at that point, when we're at scale, it will meaningfully contribute to, you know, Tesla's revenue. Well, I think it's difficult to say how much. Anything you want to add, Elon?
No, I mean, I do think that Tesla Semi, again, with autonomy, is going to be incredibly valuable. You know, that we actually have a shortage of truck drivers in America. That's one of the limiting factors on transport. You know, and people are human, so they get tired, and sometimes, and you know, there's it's you know, I have a lot of respect for truck drivers because it's a tough job. But because it's a tough job, there's not that many people that want to do it, and there's actually fewer. I believe, if my understanding is correct, there are fewer people entering truck driving as a profession than are leaving it.
Yes.
So when you think, yeah, exactly. So when you consider, okay, there's more people leaving truck driving as a profession than entering it, well, we're going to have a real logistics problem as time goes by. So autonomy will be very important to meet that need. It's a several billion a year opportunity, which I don't know in this context, is that these days does several billion a year matter? I think it does. Not nothing. It's probably like a 10 billion a year thing.
Yeah,
it's a billion a month at some point probably, but it's, you know, all this is going to pale in comparison to Optimus. So yeah, a billion a month is, it's a lot, but it's not, it's going to be like 1% of Optimus or something, you know.
Great. Thank you very much. We already covered the next question in opening remarks. So moving on, is it expected that Tesla will need to upgrade Hardware 3 vehicles? And if so, what is the timeline and expected impact to Tesla's CapEx? I think they're referring to cost there.
They're really asking the tough questions, aren't they?
I guess we haven't stopped working on Hardware 3 yet. We are still making software releases. We released the 12.6 release. recently, which was like a baby V13, but it's a significant improvement compared to what they had previously. And you know, people are still finding ways to distill larger models into smaller models. So we're not giving up on Hardware 3. We're still working on it. Just the releases will trail the Hardware 4 releases.
Great. Thanks, Ashok.
Yeah. I mean, I think the honest answer is that we're going to have to upgrade people's Hardware 3 computer for those that have bought full self-driving. And that is the honest answer. And that's going to be painful and difficult, but we'll get it done. Now I'm kind of glad that not that many people bought the FSD package.
Right, thanks, Elon. The next question, has Tesla given up on ramping their solar roof product?
Mike.
Oh, Mike, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I can take it. Yeah, solar roof remains a core part of the residential product portfolio, and it still remains where it draws a lot of customer interest despite it being premium products. We've worked on multiple iterations of engineering to make the product easier to install and distribute by reducing the SKU count. And, you know, more recently, rather than direct installation, we are focused on growth through our nationwide network of certified installers. And many of those, they've been installing Solar Roof with us for many years.
Anything yeah, that's actually turned out to be a much better way for it's just let the roof, just supply product to the roofing industry. And especially when somebody's is getting a new roof anyway or building a house from scratch, obviously this is by far the most efficient time to put in a solar roof, as opposed to putting a solar roof on a house that where the roof still has, you know, 20 years of life. That's not economically sensible, but if it's a new house or the roof needs to be replaced anyway, then solar roof can make a lot of sense. And it is a premium product. It's like the, you know, it's kind of like Model S, Model X or something. It's like it's a premium product. I think it looks really cool, and your house generates electricity, and if you combine it with the Tesla Powerwall battery, then you can be self-sufficient. So even if the grid turns off for several days, your house still works. And your roof looks awesome. So it's like, I recommend anyone who can afford it, get the Tesla Solar Roof and the Powerwall. Your family's life might depend on it.
Get enough.
And just in terms of convenience, you know, your kids are not going to yell at you because their computers don't work because the power went out and you can't charge your phone.
True story.
Actually happens. Yeah. You literally can't even call anyone because your phone's out of juice.
Thank you very much. The next question was covered in opening remarks, so we will skip that. And the last question from Say.com, what technical breakthroughs will define V14 of FSD, given that V13 already covered photon to control?
Well, we've gone a hell of a lot further than photons to output. We've been in sort of the nothing but nets situation, nothing but neural nets from photons to controls for a while now. We're just improving the neural nets. I guess we could get into some of the technical details to some degree. I have to say, I continue to be amazed by just how effective autoregressive transformers are at solving a wide range of problems. I mean, Ashok, is there anything you'd like to add there without giving away the sort of family secrets?
I mean, except for things we put on X already. So continuing to scale the model size a lot. You know, we scale a bunch in V13, but then there's still room to grow. So we're going to continue to scale the model size. We're going to increase the context length even more. The memory is sort of like limited right now. We want to increase the amount of memory imposed, like up to even minutes of context for driving. We're going to add audio to handle emergency vehicles better, add like data of the tricky corner cases that we get from the entire fleet, you know, any interventions or any kind of like, you know, user intervention. We just add that to the data set. So scaling in basically every axis, like training compute, data set size, model context, and also all the reinforcement learning objectives.
Great. All righty. With that, we will move over to analyst questions. So just as a reminder, you will need to unmute yourself to ask your question. The first question will be coming from Daniel Roeska from Bernstein. Daniel, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
Hey, good evening, everybody. It's Daniel from Bernstein. Elon, Tesla's share price clearly already includes quite few of the anticipated benefits you talked about today, yet realizing what you call kind of difficult but achievable will take some time. What are you pushing the Tesla executive team to do differently now to accelerate the innovation in order to realize the value you describe for the company?
Well, I mean, we're working on perfecting real-world AI and making rapid progress week over week, if not month, you know, certainly month over month, but often week over week. I spend a lot of time with the Tesla AI team and the Tesla Optimus team. I mean, I go where the problem is, essentially. Like, not, you know, if something's, this is, you know, unfortunate. Sometimes, like, don't talk to a Tesla executive and like, hey, we don't see you very often. I'm like, that's because your stuff is working awesome. your stuff is working really great. Unfortunately, I don't see them very often because I go where the problem is. So, you know, or not where the problem is, what, like, what's the greatest challenge that lies ahead? So, obviously, there are many challenges with Optimus. It's a hard problem to solve. Many challenges with vehicle autonomy, but we're making rapid progress in both.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Sounds like you've got a conviction that the pieces you need, right, are in place.
Yeah.
If we kind of go 12 months down the line and we look back, and you had some of those, but maybe what are the kind of two or three KPIs that would tell you that, you know, you're on track and it's going the right way and the pieces you've put in place are the right pieces, right? That's kind of what I'm looking for. Or other way around, where would it be off most likely in your mind that you say, hey, I need to go back there and I need to change something to enable the team better?
Well, I mean, I think the predictions that I'm making here are going to be pretty accurate. You know, and it's worth noting, like, so sometimes people say, oh, Elon's always late. Well, actually, no, the problem is that the media reports on when I'm late, but never reports on when I'm early. So sure, I'm optimistic, but I'm not that optimistic. You know, there are many cases in the past where we've been early, you know, such as completion of the Shanghai factory factory completion has generally been ahead of schedule, not behind. I'm very confident we'll have released unsupervised full self-driving, fully autonomous Teslas in Austin and several other cities in America by the end of this year. That's probably everywhere in America next year. Everywhere in North America, at least. I think in terms of next year, our constraint, I think it's likely to be just regulatory. You know, like Europe really has, for example, Europe is a layer cake of regulations and bureaucracy, which that really needs to be addressed. You know, there's this, you know, joke, like America innovates, Europe regulates. It's like, guys, there's too many refs on the field. I mean, for example, for us to release supervised full self-driving in Europe, even though it works really well, we have to go through a mountain of paperwork with the Netherlands, which is our primary regulatory authority. Then the Netherlands presents this to the EU in, I think, May. And there's like this big EU country committee. We expect it to be approved at that time, but there's nothing we can do to make that may happen sooner. In fact, nobody seems to do. I guess all the countries would have to somehow vote in some way to have it happen sooner than May. Otherwise, it won't happen sooner than May. So then, well, then when is unsupervised FSD allowed in Europe? I'm like, May next year, maybe? I don't know. Well, I have to find out when the EU is meeting again. Sometimes it's a 12-month cadence, sometimes a 6-month cadence. Then in China, which is a huge, gigantic market, we do have some challenges because they weren't, they currently allow us to transfer training video outside of China. And then the U.S. government won't let us do training in China. So we're in a bit of a bind there. bit of a quandary. So where we're solving that is by literally looking at videos of streets in China that are available on the internet to understand, and then feeding that into our video training so that publicly available video of street signs and traffic rules in China can be used for training, and then also putting it in we've got a very accurate simulator, and so it will train using sim for bus lanes in China. Like bus lanes in China, by the way, one of our biggest challenges in making FSD work in China is the bus lanes are very complicated. And there's literally hours of the day that you're allowed to be there and not be there. And then if you accidentally go in that bus lane at the wrong time, the you get an automatic ticket instantly. So it's kind of a big deal, bus lanes in China. So we have to put that into our simulator, train on that. The car has to know what time of day it is, read the sign. Anyway, we'll get this solved. I think we'll have unsupervised FSD in almost every market this year, limited simply by regulatory issues, not technical capability. Okay. And then unsupervised FSD in the U.S. this year, in many cities, but nationwide next year. And hopefully we have unsupervised FSD in most countries by the end of next year. That's my prediction with the best data that I have right now.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question will come from Adam Jonas at Morgan Stanley. Adam, please feel free to unmute yourself.
Thanks, everybody. So, Elon, you've said in the past about LiDAR, that for AVs at least, that LiDAR is a crutch, a fool's errand. I think you even told me once, even if it was free, you'd say you wouldn't use it. You still feel that way?
Yes.
Care to elaborate, or just, I have another question.
look, we even have a radar in the car and we turned it off.
I got it. All right, so you're still, yeah. People think you're crazy, but
obviously humans drive without shooting lasers out of their eyes. I mean, unless you're Superman, but humans drive just with passive visual, humans drive with eyes and a neural net and a brain neural net. So sort of biological, so the digital equivalent of eyes and a brain are cameras and digital neural nets or AI. So that's the entire road system was designed for passive optical neural nets. That's how the whole road system was designed, and what everyone is expecting that's how we expect other cars to behave. So therefore, that is very obviously the solution for full self-driving as opposed to the very specific, neighborhood by neighborhood solution, which is very difficult to maintain, which is what our competitors are doing.
I got
it. Yeah.
I mean, LiDAR doesn't work in the fog, guys.
LiDAR has a lot of issues. I don't have something like the SpaceX Dragon docks with the space station using LiDAR, that a program that I personally spearheaded. I don't have some fundamental bizarre dislike of LiDAR. It's simply the wrong solution for driving cars on roads.
Right. You understand how LiDAR works. I get it.
Literally designed and built our own red LiDAR. I oversaw the project, the engineering of the thing. It was my decision to use LiDAR on Dragon, and I oversaw that engineering project directly. So we literally designed and made a LiDAR to dock with the space station. If I thought it was the right solution for cars, I would do that, but it isn't.
Yeah. All right. Just as a follow-up, at CES, you said, I'm paraphrasing, that any AI will be able to do any cognitive task not involving atoms, within the next 3 or 4 years. And that would imply, Elon, that before the end of President Trump's term in office, that AI would be moving pretty damn quickly into the physical world, into the world of photons and atoms. And I'm thinking, given your work with the administration, how confident are you that the U.S. will have the manufacturing and the supply base to make good on your excitement about physical AI by the latter this decade? We seem pretty vulnerable right now. I've seen you tweeting about, Elon, about China. Freudian slip, about China having making more drones in a day than the U.S. makes in a year, and all the entanglement of the supply. So what has to happen in the U.S. to make that possible? What's your message, and what can you do about it, and what's relevant for Tesla shareholders? Thanks, Elon.
Well, at Tesla, obviously, we think manufacturing is cool. SpaceX, we think manufacturing is cool. But in general, for talented Americans, they need to, beyond my companies, beyond me and my teams here, in general, we need to make manufacturing cool again in America. I honestly think people should move from law and finance into manufacturing. That's my honest opinion. This is both a compliment and a criticism. We have too much talent in law and finance in America, and there should be more of that talent in manufacturing. At Tesla, we're making sure that we can continue to manufacture our stuff, even in the event of geopolitical tensions rising to very high levels.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question will come from Pierre Ferragut at New Street. Pierre, please feel free to unmute yourself.
Hey, thanks, guys, for taking the question. So I have a question, Elon, on deploying robotaxis in June in Austin. So that's great news. And I was wondering if it means I can, drive down to Austin in June and try unsupervised by myself with my car, or it's going to be more like your fleet testing it.
It'll be our fleet testing it. But that's our sort of toe in the water. We'll be scrutinizing it very carefully, make sure it's not something we missed. But it will be, autonomous ride hailing for money in Austin in June. And then as swiftly as possible, other cities in America. And I expect us to be doing unsupervised activity with our internal fleet in several cities by the end of the year. Then it's probably next year when people are able to add or subtract their car from the fleet. So, kind of like Airbnb, where you can sort of add or subtract your house or your guest room. You can say add it to the Airbnb inventory or don't add it to the Airbnb inventory. If you're traveling for a month, you can, or whatever the case may be, you can let other people use your house. That's probably next year, because we want to just make sure we've ironed out any kinks. And a lot of it is, it's not like we're not splitting the atom here. It's just a bunch of work that needs to be done to make sure the whole thing works efficiently, that people can order the car. It comes, it's the right spot, does exactly the right thing. All the payment systems work. The billing works.
Okay. But then my follow-up question would be, I have a Tesla, I have FSD, and I have to keep my eyes on the road all the time. It's super boring because I don't really need to intervene anymore. But the really annoying thing is that I can't just check my emails. And so are you working also on introducing, a kind of free and supervised where I could be eyes off and I would be able to check my email and would just need to, with a 5-second notice, have to go back and keep an eye on what's happening? Or is that something you're working on as well? Because It feels so close with V13 that I wonder if it's something we could expect for this year. It's a very selfish question I ask for myself, to be honest.
Yes. We need to be very confident that the probability of injury is low before we allow people to check their email and text messages. In fact, right now we're in this perverse situation, which you may have encountered yourself, where people will actually go to manual driving to check their text messages.
Yep.
So the computer doesn't yell at them, and then put it back on autonomous mode once they've checked the text messages, which is obviously less safe. Significantly less safe than just letting people check their text once in a while without the computer yelling at them.
Yeah.
But we just want to be cautious about that, the advent of that. We're in this sort of, you know, neither here nor there. But just for, I mean, I think it's not for many months longer. But we're in this perverse situation where people will turn the car off autopilot so the computer doesn't yell at them, check their text messages while steering the car with their knee and not looking out the window.
And like Elon said, right? If you have any problems with the system and when people are not looking, that is a dangerous thing. And that's what we're trying to avoid. It's the capability is getting there, but it's not fully there. That's why he was using the term of dipping our toe in the water, then getting comfortable, then keep going.
Anyway, it's not far off. But we wouldn't want to prove to ourselves, prove to ourselves and obviously prove to regulators that the car is unequivocally safer in autonomous mode than not. We're not far off. So this is like low single digit months.
To the safety aspect, we did publish our vehicle safety report today. And in Q4 was one crash for every 5.9 million miles driven, compared to a crash every 700,000 miles without autopilot.
Right. So we're getting to the point where it's an order of magnitude.
Yeah. It's like 8.5 times safety. Right. So it's just about there.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Great. Alrighty, and our last question will be coming from Dan Levi at Barclays. Dan, feel free to unmute yourself.
Great. Good evening. Thank you for taking the questions. Elon, you've talked about the need for proliferation of sustainable transport in the past as part of a sort of broader push to sustainable energy. I know we've heard a lot about President Trump's plans to reverse the EV mandate, and I think there's a view that given regulation is a driver of EV uptake, this could slow EV uptake in the U.S. So what would be your view on the right policy in the U.S., given your comments in the past of the need to push for sustainable transport?
At this point, I think that sustainable transport is inevitable. I'm highly confident that all transport will be autonomous electric, including aircraft, and that it can't be stopped any more than one could have stopped the advent of the external combustion engine, the steam engine, or one could have stopped the advent of the internal combustion engine. Even if you've been the biggest horse advocate on Earth, horses are the way, not these newfangled car automobiles. You can't stop the advent of the automobile. It's going to happen. And you can't stop the advent of electric cars. It's going to happen. The only thing holding back electric cars was range, and that is a solved problem.
Great.
and then as a follow-up, in the past, Elon, you had made a comment that, you'd be willing to sell cars at effectively no margin to get the cars out there. And there's a comment in the release today of the rate of acceleration of autonomy efforts does impact volume growth. So perhaps you could just talk about, with your efforts on FSD, how we should think about your desire to put more vehicles out in the market to take advantage of your tech advances.
So I'm not sure I understand the question. We have a lot of cars. I mean, we've got millions of cars out there.
So is your question, Dan, that how do we marry our future growth aspects with FSD?
And yeah, go ahead and unmute yourself, Dan.
Yeah, more so just how much more aggressively you would be willing to sell your cars versus in light of your improvements on FSD.
Well, right now the constraint we're trying to solve is battery production as opposed to demand. So now Q1 we've got this massive factory retooling for the new Model Y, for example. That obviously has a short-term impact on output. But the problem we're wrestling with, in fact, the executive team and I were talking about just before this call was we've got to figure out how to increase total gigawatt hours of battery production this year, one way or another. That's the constraint on our output.
Great. Alrighty. And with that, I think we are all done for today. So thanks, everyone, so much for all of your questions. We look forward to talking to you next quarter. Thank you very much and goodbye.
All right. Hey, everybody. Just one second here. We'll talk about earnings. Let me make sure we're all set up here. If you guys can let me know if the audio is at a decent level, it looks like it should be. But we can talk about the call, talk a little bit more about some of the stuff we didn't get to this afternoon. If you missed the shareholder letter reaction, that's on the channel as well. Link is in the description. But looks like pretty good call overall. Pretty positive reaction, at least, in the markets here. Looks like right now, Tesla after hours is at about $407. So up even a couple more percent after the earnings call. I think Elon started out with a lot of optimism, I think, and just confidence in where Tesla is positioned, and some of the things that should be coming for Tesla in the near future, whether that's this year, next year, or the following year. I think Elon set up the narrative well, that, you know, we've been in this transition period for Tesla. We're starting to see the fruits of that, particularly with version 13. If that rate of progress continues, and if Tesla is able to achieve what they think they can achieve, particularly relating to FSD unsupervised in Austin this year, you really start to gain a lot of confidence in, you know, that transition period starting to move out of that into the kind of the next phase of growth for Tesla. And that's where Elon's mind has been at. That's where it's at now. And I think, you know, he's always many steps ahead, but that's sort of the area that he mentally lives in, is that, you know, future sort of area. So that's where he's already at. That's why he's been confident. That's why he's continuing to be very confident and excited about Tesla's business. I think he did a great job of just explaining that to people, and, you know, representing it with a lot of confidence. So exciting to see. I think the market reacting positively to that. We talked a little bit about the earnings report. On its own, the numbers not great. You know, obviously average selling price is declining. That's hurting automotive revenue. It's hurting automotive gross margin. That's hurting operating margins and profits and net income, all these sort of things. There's a lot of negative repercussions of that. But this is a point in time, as every quarter is. It's a snapshot. It's a point in time. There's a lot influencing that from one quarter to the next. Last quarter, we had great operating margins, right, relative to how the last few quarters had gone. So even just in the last 6 months, we can see how much that can fluctuate. So historically, Tesla investors, or I guess the market more broadly speaking, haven't done a great job of really realizing that or recognizing that. But there seems to be, in the after hours today, at least a fair amount of recognition that, you know, that's what we're living through right now. This is a transition period. We've got the new Model Y coming up. I think that helps with the market's optimism that, you know, average selling prices can rebound, costs can potentially continue to decline, some of that margin comes back. But really what's most important, you know, if you're invested in Tesla, obviously there's a high multiple right now. You're not really invested for profits on, you know, Model 3 and Model Y as they currently exist today. You're likely invested for other reasons related to AI, related to Optimus, things like this. Tesla's future cash flows that they can produce on future products, and the technological lead that Tesla seems to have had now for many years. And for those things, none of what we saw in Q4 is really all that relevant. You know, not to diminish that, like the business as it operates is important, but really what's most important is that it can fund these, you know, investments in AI infrastructure, this 50,000 H100 Cortex that Tesla has been able to train FSD version 13 on, which we'll talk a little bit more about. And hopefully then version, you know, whether it's 13 or 14, hopefully that can become unsupervised in certain locations, and then Tesla can very rapidly roll that out. That's what, you know, that's what people should be excited about, and that's what's most important. And I think, interestingly, there's a pretty good amount of market recognition of that in the reaction today, which is, again, a bit unusual. But again, I think Elon did a great job of contextualizing that, you know, stating it in both a confident and succinct way at the beginning of the call. I thought it was a great call from Elon and from the Tesla team. So excited about that. So we can go through the notes and then we can get to some of the topics that we didn't get a chance to discuss earlier today. If anyone has questions, I'll try to get to those as well. It's a little bit easier if they come through in the super chats. I think I can, just trying to get like my view set up here. Let me try to expand this a bit. Okay. All right, so just gonna like go through some of the notes that we went through here, just kind of piece by piece. I mentioned a couple of the more major ones earlier though. So really just talking about the business, but maximizing volumes, doubling down on autonomy, really more like 10xing down on autonomy. We heard a lot about that throughout the call. Investments in AI and robotics that will pay immense dividends in the future, emphasizing that they will be immense. Path for Tesla to be the most valuable company in the world, maybe several times more valuable than the next closest company, maybe as much as the next five companies combined. There's a chance of that difficult path, but achievable path. So we've heard Elon say things like this before, Apple, Aramco, you know, valuation combined, multiple trillions of dollars. So nothing really new on that front, but seems like maybe if it's possible, even a little bit more confidence in that statement or of the possibility of that outcome than when Elon has said that before. And obviously the, you know, vast majority of that, which came up again when talking about the Semi. Yeah, Semi could be a $10 billion product, could have great margins on that. You know, I don't know what they would be, 20, 30% when you include autonomy, probably even more significant than that. But I guess take that out for the second while we talk about this. But even a product line like that, potentially pretty much immaterial to the opportunity for these other things, as Elon has talking about increasing the utility of a vehicle, you know, potentially five times what it is today, just sitting around, not being put to work. They didn't talk about it on this call, but one of the things that they've talked about before with Hardware 5 is even potentially increasing the utility of that by potentially, you know, operating AI, sort of like a cloud-based AI system when the cars aren't, you know, utilizing it for driving. They could potentially be using that compute for other things, which is probably interesting in the concept of what we've seen, in the context of what we've seen this week with DeepSeek, obviously, or, you know, over the last month or so with DeepSeek, but really sort of coming to a head this week with DeepSeek R1. I would think that would increase the probability of being able to leverage hardware that would be in a vehicle like Hardware 5 for AI-related tasks. But that's very early take. Obviously, people still sorting through what the implications of DeepSeek are. But that would have been a much better question. Adam Jonas, Morgan Stanley, that would have been a much better question than asking about LiDAR. How many times do we need to ask about LiDAR? I mean, seriously. Go read a transcript from any other call over the last many years when that has been asked identically. It's just, I'm extremely baffled by asking that question. Extremely baffled. Okay, I'm getting heated here, but sad. It's sad that that was the question that was asked. All right, where are we at? autonomous and robots. Okay, great. So lay the groundwork, structure for that in 2025, setting up Epic 2026 and Ridiculous 2027 and 2028. So again, we've been in this transition period. I've been talking about this for a long time, but hopefully we're starting to come out of that. I think one of the things we still don't really know much about, too, is the more affordable vehicles this year. Tesla mentioned 60% production capacity growth in 2025 from these new affordable models. That, again, doesn't mean that deliveries will be up. Even production would be up to that level. You've got to ramp things. That takes time. You're never going to utilize your production capacity at 100% rate. So just keep those things in mind. But we're getting, you know, we're in the first half of 2025 now, and we still don't really know what these vehicles are. So potentially some excitement in store. And I think that's something that's helping out with the, you know, the stock here, getting that reiterated that those are still coming, which initially when the report came out, the summary section made it put that in question, at least for me reading that. But glad to see that reiterated both in the letter and here on the call. So stuff about FSD. I guess at this point, let's just, I can talk a little bit about my experience. So I think, you know, if you're reading about this on X, if you don't have a version 13 car, I can attest that it's a massive step forward. Version 13 for me has been incredible. It's been such a massive improvement over what was already a massive improvement with version 12.3.6 on hardware 3. That was kind of the version to me where I was like, man, I'm a little bit blown away because the progress was probably the most significant step forward that I had seen in FSD over the, you know, 2-3 years that I had been using it. That was an excellent update. And then, since then, you know, a little bit slower progress, but that was for hardware 3. Now, in December, I got a new Model 3 hardware 4 vehicle, and obviously that comes along with version 13. So both going from hardware 3, version 12, up to hardware 4, version 13, that to me was pretty much an equivalent in terms of significance step forward in FSD capability. I've got a little bit less than 1,000 miles on the car already, 90% plus of that probably on FSD. People will complain. There's always this like question of what is a safety critical intervention. Everyone's going to have a different interpretation of that. But if you take the truest interpretation of it, critical means that you would have crashed if this intervention did not occur. I do not believe that I've had a safety critical intervention yet. Now, there have been things that it definitely should not have done, things that could potentially lead to something that would be a safety issue, but that's not necessarily a safety critical intervention, at least how I believe Tesla interprets it, nor how I would necessarily interpret it in the strictest terms of the definition. So, again, not to say there hasn't been disengagements, not to say that there has not been interventions. There have been just a handful of those. And again, maybe those, had I not intervened in those situations, it could have led to a safety issue. But in terms of just safety critical at that time, I don't think that I have had a single safety critical intervention. So I'm extremely excited about it. Not only that, it's also just so much more human-like. It's able to be very aggressive now, which I'm in Chicago, in the Chicago area. You kind of need to drive aggressively to both not incite road rage in people and also just to get where you need to be. Being able to be aggressive is important. And it's doing a much better job at that. Extremely smooth, confident, comfortable. It's awesome. It's so awesome. So if you haven't had a chance to try version 13 yet, I don't know, go test drive a car. I think they have version 13 on the vehicles in stores. So it's great. I've been extremely happy with the progress. So you think about that step forward from hardware 3 to hardware 4. You think about version 12 to version 13. Now think about, all right, hardware 4 to hardware 5. I assume CyberCab will probably have hardware 5. And think about, you know, version 14. Ashok mentioned all of the different sort of scaling, I don't know if levers is not the right word for it, but scaling verticals that they're, you know, each of these different categories of things that they can improve on, they still have a long path to continue to improve on. And, you know, when you've got multiple of these different scaling factors and you're scaling on all of them and you're doing it all very quickly, there's a lot of reason to continue to expect progress like the progress that we saw in 2024, which when we look back at 2024, if you just look at the earnings, if you just look at the deliveries, if you just look at anything in the earnings report, like this year was trash, right? Like relative to 2022, 2023, you would say that, you know, this was a bad year for Tesla, but that's looking at the wrong stuff because 2024 was an excellent year for Tesla because FSD, according to Tesla, probably advanced 100 times, maybe 1,000 times from where it began the year. And if that happens again in 2025, then I think it's done, right? I think it's solved. I think that gets Tesla to a level where this is a viable product, unsupervised robotaxi, and kind of what we've been talking about for the last, you know, 5-10 years is reality. And that's going to happen. It's going to happen at some point. So we're getting close, and it's extremely exciting. I think that's part of, you know, why the market has a high multiple on Tesla, obviously, in addition to just like sentiment and everything that's going on from like a regulatory perspective around hopefully like a national framework for FSD. All these things I think are helpful, just in terms of like the stock price reaction in the last few months. But underlying the progress is what's most important. And again, somewhat surprisingly, the market's seeming to be aware of that to an extent. So exciting. All right, so that's my car. Yeah, otherwise the Model 3 has been great. Just the actual vehicle itself, you know, for me, it's mostly about FSD, being able to follow the progress on that. That's the most important thing for me. But just that aside, the car has been a very nice upgrade too. So I'm very happy with it. Okay, so that talks about utility. I may have said this before, but I think it was a good point for Elon to mention, you know, moving both people and cargo. I think people think of like, oh, robotaxi is only going to be valuable during rush hour. So you really, maybe you get like, I don't know, 1.5 or 2 times utility in like a more bearish type of a situation. I think people just like have really bad at understanding that when you have such a technological disruption or innovation like what we would be seeing here, where you're literally just taking out the majority of the cost of transportation, which is, you know, a couple fold. It's fuel, which electric vehicles dramatically reduce. And then it's, you know, the actual person operating the vehicle, whether that's your own time or paying a driver. Those are the two most significant costs by far. And Tesla's working on reducing any of the other costs as well, but those are the two most significant. When you remove or dramatically reduce those things, you completely create a new market that never existed before, because things that people wouldn't have done before because they were too expensive, you all of a sudden you start doing. And people have a really bad time understanding that and imagining what solutions people will come up with. But I think that's what one of the things that Elon is fantastic with, is he very innately understands that and just builds in that direction. And it's kind of like SpaceX, right? Like, you know, maybe day one of trying to build a reusable rocket, Elon wasn't really thinking about Starlink, but he realized that, maybe he was, I don't know. But if he wasn't, at some point along the way, you realize, oh, now that I have this lower launch cost, I can instead put thousands of satellites up and make a viable satellite internet at low Earth orbit for the entire world to use. And now it's, you know, this multi-billion dollar product line that maybe people didn't even think about in the early days of SpaceX. So very analogous to that. And some of the, you know, like that's a big reason why it's not a comp to like Uber or Lyft. It's just, this is a completely different product, completely different business, completely different market. They're just so different. Very ranty today. I think I missed this a little bit. Okay. Bunch of utility, reality of autonomy is upon us. Don't know of a past precedent of this, biggest value creation ever. We'll get better over time. I was a little bit surprised on the China stuff. Elon basically saying that they don't have a way to train from vehicles in China at the moment, which I don't know if that had been disclosed or if I had realized that was the case before. And it does sound a little bit challenging. Well, I guess two things. It sounds a little bit challenging to be able to just train on videos that are on, you know, just randomly on the internet. And then the second consideration would be that, and this is more of a red flag, if Tesla can just train off random videos that are on the internet, then presumably other people could get to the point where they could also just train off random videos that are on the internet. And maybe it's only applicable to Tesla because they do have so much robust training data from their fleet across other regions. But if that's not as major of a factor, then it would suggest that the lead generated by FSD could potentially be a little bit smaller. If someone can just go out and build another cluster, 50,000 H100s, and train off random videos on the internet, I mean, including FSD, there's a lot of those now these days. Again, I don't think that that's really the case, but it's something worth considering, and also would have been another good question for an analyst to ask about instead of LiDAR. All right, more excitement about 2027, 2028. Elon said a couple of times working to grow annual volumes, battery pack constraint. He mentioned that they continue to exist in this like decision trade-off situation where should battery packs go to energy or should they go to automotive? I think that's being like a little bit generous to the automotive business. That's pretty clear this year that, you know, if you look at the average selling prices and things like that and volume decline over year over year, like there was definitely demand issues throughout the year this year. Now that doesn't mean that there's not also supply constraints and those constraints affect the business too. And when you think about like forward looking after this launch of this Model Y, especially with these new, more affordable vehicles coming online, you can very quickly get back into a situation where you are battery constrained instead of demand constrained. These things always ebb and flow. That's why people shouldn't be so critical whenever demand constraints are raised. I know that was a major sort of like hurdle when this sort of stuff started popping up, is people kind of coming into the realization that that is a possibility for Tesla. And again, that's okay. You know, these products are the most popular products in the world. Model Y, it's the best-selling vehicle in the world. At some point, you get to the point where the product plateaus, and that's fine as long as that's not the growth lever for the company for the rest of, you know, for the rest of its existence, which is very clearly not the case for Tesla. So eventually, each product is going to hit that plateau. That plateau may last for a while. The next wave of growth may not be there yet, but that's okay as long as the company continues to execute, continues to lead, which I've always said most important for me is Tesla's leading in electric vehicles and leading in autonomy, which I always continue to believe is the case. So in that situation, it's just kind of a good reminder of that. And again, things change quickly. So yes, I think they're demand constrained at periods of time this year. Yes, I also think being battery pack constrained can still make sense in that context. Vehicle safety report. So I talked a little bit about that. There was the chart in the earnings report, so I won't recap that again here. But again, check that video out if you didn't have a chance to do that yet. Version 14, another step forward. So Ashok talked about some of the reasons that version 14 would be another step forward. Training for Optimus. So a lot of really good information on Optimus, but, you know, obviously the use cases for a humanoid robot are much more diverse than a vehicle. So training capacity, training capability probably needs to be significantly higher. Maybe there's 1,000 more times use cases. Who knows, you know, how accurate Elon's just talking orders of magnitude here. But you probably don't need to just scale training 1,000 times, maybe with improvements, both in terms of how training is done and certainly in terms of training cost. Maybe it's, you know, 10 times more training capability that's needed in terms of like CapEx or something over time. Long-term, Optimus potentially be north of $10 trillion in revenue. So Elon said, you know, this year they hope to be able to produce at a rate of 1,000 per month. Next year, maybe 10,000 per month, maybe version 3 a year or two after that or something, more like 100,000 a month. So looking for a significant ramp here. Because the battery capacity for the Optimus robots will be smaller than on a per vehicle basis, it makes a faster ramp something that is potentially more achievable. The counter argument to that is that Elon did say that a lot of this technology in Optimus, or maybe even all of the technology that's used in Optimus, is something that Tesla had to design. There was no part available that they could buy at any price. And when you're in a situation like that, as Elon has said many times, production is the hardest part. So I think he's excited about the possibility of it. But when you're talking about a complex product like this, especially a new product that's in the early stages of iteration, and all of those parts for that product are unique and something that no one has really, you know, developed or supplied before, yeah, there's a lot of risk to a production ramp from a situation like that. So Tesla's not any stranger to that. Nothing there that would be surprising, but just something to keep in mind. Although on one hand, you've got the excitement of it, keep that in the back of your head as well. Future is going to be incredibly different than the past, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, man, versus 2 years ago, where society is at right now is, I mean, it's night and day already for the people that are like paying attention to what's going on. So it's crazy. The rate of accelerating technological innovations and progress here is nuts. So I think we're just going to continue to see that. I mean, it's it's every week, right? We get some pretty major update in artificial intelligence. And there's insane potential for that to benefit other areas of technology too. So, all right, I bolded this, but obviously everyone I'm sure heard that. So launching as a paid service in June, obviously the most specific, precise timeline that has been given. Definitely sounds like California will be later. No surprise on that, given probably a higher regulatory burden. But we'll see. June 2025. It's very close. Who knows if that'll happen on time? But it's nice that Tesla's confident enough to state a date. And it's mid 2025 is probably, I don't know, maybe a little bit earlier than people would have expected. So definitely exciting to see that on there as well. Operating, if you didn't see the videos yesterday on X, Tesla's already doing this at their factories, so pretty cool to see that. I also liked and noticed this in the video that, they somehow within the software, Tesla is giving specific instructions on where these vehicles need to be in, sort of a parking lot situation. Right now with FSD, it's kind of just like, you go to the general destination and then you're there, and it doesn't necessarily know exactly where to go or what to do at that point. And I think that's, to come shortly, but obviously Tesla utilizing some other addition to the software to manage those things with their fleet on the line. There's also the camera calibration stuff. Tesla's doing that throughout the manufacturing line now, they said. So they can just, once they're at the end of the production line, they can just drive off without having to worry about the camera calibration. I'm sure there's still some calibration that's happening, at least I would guess, but not enough to not make it work for that use case. So that's cool. All right, so yeah, just like starting slow obviously makes sense. Internal plan for 10,000 Optimuses this year. Probably won't achieve that, but probably several thousand doing useful things by the end of the year. Again, much sooner than I think people would have guessed, certainly 12 months ago. Perhaps making 100 million of these things a year in the future, which would mean that, there would be a billion of these robots out there at some point. Entirely new supply chain, we talked about that. Optimus being the majority of the value of the company. I don't think that's a new comment. Back to Earth, some of the current stuff. So energy, if you follow the AI stuff, I mean, maybe DeepSeek changes this a little bit, but probably not overall. Power is in demand. Power and energy, there's a lot of discussion on what needs to be done. I think the All In podcast was talking about this the other day. Just the power and energy needs, and especially in the United States, to ramp those up to be able to stay competitive on the AI front, just because the demand for power and energy with data centers related to AI is going to be so significant. And obviously the return on having those capabilities should be very high, and also of national security importance, that the energy market is probably one to be pretty bullish on. And obviously Tesla through Tesla Energy can be a significant contributor to the utility of that market. So I'm fully in agreement with them on this. We had not heard this yet, but I also bolded this, building a third megafactory. So that's extremely exciting as well. I think that was where Elon mentioned that they, one of the things they need to consider is where the batteries are allocated between energy and automotive. So it sounds like that's a little bit potential constraint when it comes to this third megafactory. I've seen a lot of people question, like, hey, you keep saying energy demand is crazy, why don't you just build like five of these? And that's obviously the reason, is because there's not necessarily battery capacity to be able to do that. So I think people have kind of forgotten about battery constraints in the last year, just because there's been a little bit softer EV market. But it's, it's still a challenge and still something that needs to be, grown, improved over time. So demand for total gigawatt hours will grow in a very big way over time. Pivotal year for this for Tesla, perhaps the most significant year in Tesla's history. Vaibhav's opening comments here. So a lot of this we discussed in the earnings report episode earlier. He did mention that they probably are going to see a decline in production, probably obviously deliveries and margins as they transition to the new Model Y here, which no surprise, like that almost goes without saying, but just an important reminder. Mark to market on Bitcoin, we talked about that, but that'll happen in all future quarters. Need to look at the actual mechanics of that, but something that benefited Tesla quite a bit this quarter in terms of the bottom line numbers. CapEx flat year over year. Wouldn't be surprised to see that increase, but looks like for now flat. So California and perhaps many other cities for unsupervised FSD. So I think contextually different comments here on licensing FSD this time around. Elon had mentioned before that there was some discussions. It sounds like those discussions are either greater in number or more significant or serious now than maybe at that time when it was previously discussed. So I think they're getting a lot of interest here, and I think that's probably related to version 13. Again, this is, when you drive it, it just feels different now. It just feels different. It feels confident. It feels smooth. Yeah, maybe there's some issues sometimes, but I think for someone that was skeptical before being in it now, it becomes much more difficult to be skeptical. So I think that's probably a factor in, the comments that we're hearing here from Elon on licensing, which is great. Having your competitors reach out to you about trying to use your software, that's great. It's a strong position to be in. As Elon said, I don't probably put a ton of weight in the value of this at the moment, because I think any of these OEMs, it's going to take them many years to sort of integrate. And by then, the market's reaction to the value of this should be quite significant already at that point. So I think it's a positive sign in terms of like the actual earnings to the business. I'm not sure it's incredibly important, certainly not in the near term, just because of the time that it would take to implement those things for relatively slow moving OEMs. Optimus not design locked, so also a good hedge on some of the production milestones and stuff that were mentioned. Okay, we talked more about that. Yeah, so the question on Optimus pricing, pricing is just a function of supply and demand generally, unless there's some other factor at play, but cost is the more important question. Elon saying at $1 million a year, he thinks it would cost less than $20,000, probably something like half the cost of a Model Y just based on basically the bill of materials. So makes sense there. Semi, so kind of what they said in the earnings report, ramping next year, huge demand, especially with autonomy. Again, something that I think people kind of forget about when they think about FSD from time to time, but that's a massive market. Elon saying, if we're honest, we probably are going to have to upgrade hardware 3. He didn't get into the specific costs. He did say he did specify the computer for hardware 3. If that's the case, that should be, not the most difficult upgrade. I know Tesla's upgraded computers on previous cars. I want to say it was, like a $1,500 cost item. And obviously Tesla is saying here that they would be paying for those costs. But if they're not getting into the cameras and things like that, then hopefully it's a relatively easy change. But who knows? It does sound like it would be, as they say here, painful and difficult, but they would get it done. And now that Elon has said this, there's obviously going to be a lot of customer pressure to do this, especially as version 13 and hardware 4 vehicles performance is superseding hardware 3. I've kind of had the thought, even though I did upgrade my car because I just wanted to be current with the progress. Again, I think DeepSeek, a good example here. Over time, the capability of what you can do with limited hardware increases as people figure out how to optimize things. So I think kind of like giving up on hardware 3 may have been a little bit premature, but it does sound like, you know, Tesla's at the point where, you know, they think maybe they're going to have to do this anyway. Maybe these optimizations aren't going to come or aren't going to come quickly enough. So, you know, maybe they feel it's the right move to upgrade those customers. I tend to, you know, I guess agree with that. I think it really just depends on how long Tesla thinks it would take to kind of get to that level. If they think it's going to be many years, then yeah, definitely, I think go ahead with the upgrade. If they think it's going to be 6 months, then obviously it doesn't make a lot of sense. So I would guess they think it's more in the latter camp, if at all. So not giving up on Solar Roof. That's good to hear. We talked a little bit about that earlier today, so good to see that. Not giving up, but also sort of tempering the expectations, premium product, etc. I think those expectations are pretty low, though, so maybe not even tempering them. So version 14, just talking about, again, still room to grow, the scaling of the model size, the context length, the memory, adding audio inputs, increased data from the fleet, from corner cases, just all these different facets that they can continue to improve on, distill into an even better model with version 14. And then eventually, right, we'll get hardware 5, AI 5, continue to upgrade the hardware as well. All right, analyst questions. Yeah, I don't think anything too noteworthy in here. Interesting to get a little bit more context on the regulatory burdens, both in Europe. We talked a little bit other, you know, about China as well. Maybe that tempers a little bit of the optimism around potential FSD. I feel like we see every quarter there's some rumor on X that, you know, FSD is going to be released this quarter in China. That's not what it sounds like here from, you know, just kind of like the tone or the context that Elon gave here, but who knows? He did also say unsupervised everywhere kind of next year, so tough to really know. LiDAR question, our favorite. U.S. manufacturing, I mean, yeah, obviously Elon's in support of that. I liked Pierre's question, just like trying to understand, all right, unsupervised in Austin in June, does that mean if you have a Tesla in June in Austin that it can also be unsupervised? And I think the answer was no, it would just be Tesla's fleet for now. Just like how Tesla on, you know, at the factory has something that is not in the public version of FSD to be able to handle like where the vehicle is supposed to go and park for, you know, for distribution. Just like they have a little tweaks like that, I would suspect that they also have things like that happening in this internal fleet when this testing time does begin. So I think that's why they wouldn't necessarily just like let other people use it unsupervised right away. But it does sound like they're aware that we're in this kind of weird period where, as they said, people will just disengage FSD to be able to look away from straightforward for a minute or a few seconds to be able to check a phone or whatever. Obviously dangerous, so not a good situation to be in, but kind of like learned behavior from getting yelled at by the camera. So it's a tricky situation. You know, there's probably not any great solution during this interim period other than just to like get out of it as fast as possible. So I think that sort of, you know, getting out of it as fast as possible is kind of the answer to Pierre's question. So I do think that it's something that, you know, Tesla will try to do, but obviously they want a way to be able to, you know, test this. Their version of what they think the future is going to be like, that seems to be the priority versus trying to take away the nags or something sooner. We've talked about this before, but kind of like level 4 systems, I don't think Tesla cares about at all, which I think part of Pierre's question was, you know, can it just let me know like 5 seconds before I need to actually pay attention? It's just Tesla's not going to spend the engineering resources when they feel like they're so close to a level 5 system. They're just not going to spend the engineering resources to try to like make the current solution work for something like that when in their view in maybe 3 or 6 months it's the capabilities are beyond having to be able to monitor anyway. So they're just not going to spend any time trying to optimize for that. But hopefully once they're able to do it, they, you know, very quickly follow on with letting personal ownership be unsupervised as well. All right. I think that's everything for the most part. as I said, interesting call. Good call, I think. I think it did a good job of just, you know, level setting or reinvigorating or whatever word you want to use, refocusing the attention on this transition period that Tesla is in and all of the exciting growth opportunities that we seem to be a little bit on the doorstep of, both with new models coming in the next few months, hopefully unsupervised FSD in a limited way in the next few months. We're definitely at an exciting time, even though the financials, you know, are much less exciting in this current quarter. Still a lot to be excited about. And product updates, you know, new Model Y, I think, is going to be a great vehicle. It's an improvement to what's already the best-selling vehicle in the world. And I think Tesla's, you know, my expectation would be that Tesla's, through this update, probably has figured out ways to continue to bring costs down on the Model Y as well. And then hopefully you can leverage that across an even larger production rate for vehicles, you know, across the entirety of Tesla's business. So exciting on that. Okay, I do see some super chats here, so let me take a look at those and then we'll probably wrap up. These are a little bit tricky for me to read here in this. Hollywood KW, thank you. I can't put this on screen, but that's just a compliment, I guess, but I guess I'll read it. I'll take Rob's solid analysis and discussion over the shallow, clickbaited, and sensationalized YouTube Tesla content that is out there, infotainment over entertainment. Thank you. I mean, I think you guys know one of the problems I had with just being a YouTuber, I guess. Don't really like love the phrase, but one of the problems I had with it was just like, it's, you know, there are so many incentives. It's very hard to like swim against the grain of seeking attention, because that's what you need to do to monetize, to be able to afford, you know, to run that business. It's just, that's how you increase revenue. So I really did not like that. And probably one of the worst parts of what I, you know, was doing for a long time. Not that I was engaging in that, but just like having to swim against that for a long time. So I appreciate that recognition and appreciate the support, because if you find people on YouTube that are not engaging in that stuff, you should definitely support them, because, you know, they're making that decision actively and they're making it against a lot of incentives that suggest that they should not do that. Rex, good to see you on here. Rex said, if you believe in Elon's master plan and his abilities, cars and energy are important now, but will be much less important in the future. Like Ron Barron says, this is a generational opportunity. Totally agree. If you look at all of the businesses that Elon has been in, you know, it's always building for the next wave of growth. And Tesla's gone through so many of those through the years. SpaceX is the same. So excited to head into the next one. Benjamin, I would pay a small amount for Tesla Monthly. Any idea why they don't release detailed safety data on FSD? Data usually includes AP. So a couple things. So if you're talking about the safety report, I think the majority of that now is probably FSD. Maybe I'm incorrect in that thinking, but that would be my hunch. Now, people ask, like, okay, if Tesla's at, like, whatever, thousands of miles in between safety-critical disengagements, according to their calculations, why doesn't Tesla show us that data? The problem is that Tesla doesn't want... Once you start sharing that data, you need to share it forever. Otherwise, people will interpret the lack of sharing in the future as a huge red flag, which, you know, may be fair, maybe not. But once you start sharing something, then... You need to continue to see consistent progress on that metric. When you're talking about something like FSD, and to some extent, like the rate of progress is unknown, or the ability to progress in the future is unknown, specifically the time frame for that progress, as we've seen over the last many years. Now, I think Tesla has a lot more confidence now, but there's not a lot of upside to sharing it at the moment. If you get to a situation where, let's say, the progress like stalls out for a quarter, a couple of quarters, whatever, or even regresses, even if it's due to seasonality, right? Like I talked about that with the safety report, there's regression due to seasonality. Once you start sharing these metrics, all of that sort of context starts to come into play. All of the questions, you know, start to center around those types of things. And then you're also putting a metric out there that potentially is the right metric to optimize to, but once you start publishing those things, then inherently there's some cultural, you know, attention to optimizing for those things. And maybe it's not the exact right metric that the team should be focused on at that exact moment in time. So there's very few benefits to sharing that. Like, what does that do for Tesla? Does it just like helps their stock price or helps consumer confidence, I guess, maybe a little bit, but those things are really not important if Tesla feels like they're actually going to solve this. The most important thing is just solving it rather than having to worry about, you know, these questions in the interim period. So if anything, it's just more of a distraction. There's risks associated with sharing those things that it doesn't really seem worth it to me. So I think Tesla probably agrees. It's a good question though. Alan, thank you for the super chat. Jack, good to see you on here. Optimist projections, 100 million units per year, cost of 20K per unit, annual cost of 2 trillion per year, anticipated revenue of 10 trillion per year, gross profit margin of 80%. 8 trillion gross profit per year, missing anything? So yeah, on the numbers that he specifically said, fair. I think the $10 trillion though, he could have been talking about an even higher production rate, which I think Elon may have alluded to in the past. So obviously if you say that's 200 million units per year, then that changes your gross margin equation pretty significantly. So I wouldn't necessarily link those as directly because they were separate comments. Yeah, I'm just trying to get through some of the super chat questions here. Was this the first call in a while where a Dojo question was not asked? Probably. I do think Tesla is still working on Dojo, though, still a focus. Teha, good to see you on here. I know you have other things going on, but please don't stop the quarterly calls. No plans to stop the quarterly calls. Like I said earlier, I think I enjoy this, so it's good to be back every once in a while. Steven, just asking about First Principles Group. Yeah, so for those of you that, you know, don't know First Principles Group, that's my current primary focus and for the foreseeable future. You can learn more about that at firstprinciples.group if you're not familiar. All right, so I think that's all of the super chats. Again, thank you for those. I really appreciate that. And I think we'll wrap it up here again soon, but I'll just reiterate, FSD version 13 for me has been great. I'm in a difficult driving situation, right? Like, I'm in the middle of winter in Chicago. It's very busy. You know, not that I've been dealing with like a lot of snow on these drives or anything. Like, I think the road weather, as it were, has been fine. But it's been great. Obviously, traffic is quite high in Chicago, but it's been performing phenomenally well. I love it. I can't imagine having a car that doesn't have FSD. It's just so nice, so convenient, especially in environments that you're not familiar with, right? Like, I'm pretty familiar with Chicago at this point, but it's not an easy place to drive if you have not driven here before. And FSD feels like it's been driving here for a long time, which is really nice. So, all right. We'll wrap it up. Again, if you didn't catch the episode earlier, you can go check that out. We talk a little bit more about the financials in there. I think that's it. Oh, someone did ask me for the politics talk. So I guess we'll wrap it up there on the least fun thing to discuss. Everyone's got their own feelings on political issues, right? And a lot of people's feelings are based in really great reasoning. And I think there's a lot of, you know, constructive points of view that people have on both sides for various different reasons and leads them to different conclusions. So I don't think having political discussions in a format like this, where it's like I'm talking to a lot of different people with a lot of different opinions and I can't have any sort of like back and forth with each of those people, is really not super productive. So I won't get super deep into it, but I'm trying to remember like what the specific question was. I think it was around, which Elon kind of talked about in the call, which matched what I had said briefly earlier before. It was kind of like the question was essentially, you know, it seems like there's a conflict in terms of, you know, what Tesla seeks to achieve with sustainable energy and the direction that the current administration seems to be taking around energy. Basically, you know, how do you resolve the conflict between those two different points of view? I think the first is that different points of view are acceptable, right? Like there's nothing wrong with having different points of view. Just because, you know, Elon may have a different point of view on energy doesn't mean that he can't be involved in an administration that, you know, has a different point of view if he has the same point of view on a lot of different other areas, which I think is the case. So I think people like very, for some reason, like very much isolate in on one specific thing, which is oftentimes, you know, incorrect, especially to do when we're talking about a situation where there's two political parties, right? There's two choices and there's thousands of issues and there's going to be disagreement on, you know, across the board and in some, you know, percentage. So first of all, I don't think the conflict is, you know, there, the expectation to not have any sort of conflict or disagreement or whatever is, you know, sort of a false premise to start with. And then in the case of this particular, I guess, quote unquote conflict or whatever, as Elon said, I don't think it's a major concern for him because I think that, and he very clearly stated it, I think that he thinks that the technology, the path for technology for sustainable energy, I don't want to say like achieved, but I think that he thinks that that path is certain because Elon's thinking of things from a first principles perspective, and he thinks that those first principles are organized or whatever, they exist in a way that makes this an inevitability. And what Tesla's always try to do is accelerate that, right? Like they're not saying that we need to, like Tesla's never said that we need to regulate this because it's not going to happen if we don't regulate it. Tesla's always just tried to bring the technological accelerant acceleration to make that happen more quickly. And I think Tesla's done a great job of that, and I think they'll continue to do a great job of that regardless of what regulatory regime exists in whatever region. Like that's not going to change Tesla's focus on achieving those things and helping, you know, accelerate that progress to these new technologies that are should be fundamentally superior, at least from Elon's point of view. So the analogy he gave there was great. Like no matter how much regulation you had around horses or internal combustion engines, like internal combustion engines were going to win. Similarly, autonomous electric vehicles are going to win for the reasons we talked about before. You have a much cheaper cost of operating them. It's just, you know, that's how technology and economics and everything works. Those are the forcing functions that ultimately are going to matter most rather than the regulatory forcing functions. So I think that's how Elon views it, how he squares it with his involvement and all sorts of things like that. So, okay, do we, a couple more, another super chat in here. Anders, thank you. Do we pay enough attention to the amazing safety report referenced? So again, I talked about that a little bit in the episode earlier today, so I won't reiterate that, but go back and watch that if you missed it. It's tough, like, do we pay enough attention to it? I think we do in sort of like this Tesla space. Outside of it, probably not. It's tough because like the data that Tesla is presenting there is not great. It's, you know, they're comparing instances where autopilot or FSD is active, which generally could be active in situations that are safer in general, versus then comparing it to just a total aggregate of all miles driven, in terms of like collision rates for, you know, US population of cars on average. And again, the population of those vehicles could be older. Maybe those are older vehicles have some fault that causes them to be more frequently in accidents. Maybe they don't have the advanced active safety features that most cars on the road that are newer vehicles have. So there's a lot of flaws in using that as like the benchmark. If you're talking about being 10 times better, you need to be 10 times better on the same system, right? Which would be a Tesla vehicle driving the exact same miles, same driving domain, everything the same. You need to be better on that versus just like the overall vehicle average. That should be the bar. And you should probably be significantly better because of all the issues around, you know, liability. Like you're gonna be fine if you crash yourself. You're not gonna, well, people are gonna still blame the other party, but let's say you crash yourself into a wall or something. That's gonna be much more acceptable to you and to the media and to the judicial system and all that sort of stuff. Than an autonomous vehicle crashing into the same wall in the same circumstances. So it's just, it needs to be better for many reasons. And I don't, lost my train of thought there, but hopefully that makes sense. Will, Rob, I think I speak for everyone here. We miss you a lot. A lot of us would pay a subscription for the Tesla Weekly on Apple Podcasts. I can consider it. This was a lot of fun. I think I was pretty burned out on Tesla Daily. I think I'm like starting to get a little bit out of that burnout, which is really nice. So this has been good. I'll consider it. No promises. I'm gonna keep doing the quarterly. But it is nice to be back, and just the support is awesome. Like this audience and community has always been awesome, and that continues, obviously. So I really do appreciate that. All right, I got to wrap it up. It's been 4 hours of this almost. So I appreciate you guys tuning in. Again, this was a pleasure. I'm excited, you know, about the earnings call. I'm excited about what's to come this year in 2025. And I'll try to check in at least a little bit more frequently, at least on X, if not on episodes. So